Our next guest has been the center of controversy in America since the late 90s when she published her first book, High Crimes and Misdemeanors. She's often polarizing, always irreverent, and she's at it again with her latest book, Never Trust a Liberal Over Three, Especially a Republican. Ann Coulter is the author of 9 New York Times bestsellers. She's a syndicated columnist. Ann, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here, Rob. Excellent intro music.
You're a Grateful Dead fan, I heard.
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, let's talk shutdown a little bit. Surrounding the recent shutdown, we had different reactions from Republicans after it ended. Some said the Republican Party was being taken over by Tea Party extremists. Others said Republicans in Congress chickened out, didn't hold out long enough. What's your take on it?
I disagree with both of those. I'm really proud of our guys. And if our party is being taken over by the likes of Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, I say hallelujah. We could use more like them. I think they're probably the two smartest United States senators right now. I love Republicans, but that's kind of rare for us. And I don't know what the point of holding out any longer is. They made their point. I think they got the word out. They've established the Republican Party as the anti-Obamacare party. We're going to fight against this. Just give us a majority in the Senate. And perhaps most importantly, I don't think anybody outside of, I don't know, a dozen of us realized that Congress, after foisting Obamacare on us, instantly issued a waiver to itself. That is perhaps not universally known now, but it's a lot better known, and information does tend to go out in concentric circles. That was the Republicans' last offer. Fine, we will fund the entire government. We will fund Obamacare, but we insist that Congress live under Obamacare themselves. And the Democrats said, no, no, don't make us live under Obamacare.
There's been a narrative going back a long time. You know, we hear nowadays establishment Republicans against Tea Party, but going back to the Goldwater campaign in the 60s or Reagan and Ford in the 70s, there's always this talk, there's this war within the Republican Party tearing it apart. They're still here. Does that narrative get oversold, do you think?
It may. I'm sure the Democrats are delighted when Republicans pull out the internal firing squad. In general, I come down on the side of conservatives. It's been my experience that every time Republicans lose, the liberal Republicans will turn to the conservatives and say, it's your fault, give up your issues. But if you look at our issues when they're voted on individually, gay marriage, that's been voted on by about 36 states. Only two or three, I think, have approved it. So that's more popular than being against gay marriage, rather, is more popular than Republicans are. Obamacare has consistently had a majority of Americans opposed to it, and I don't think it's getting any better now with this website. We don't really know how people would vote if we were allowed to vote on abortion, but polls going back to Roe v. Wade show that a huge majority, substantial majority, 70% oppose abortion at least after the first trimester and support reasonable restrictions like parental notification and spousal notification. So our issues are conservative. The social issues tend to be more popular than, say, raising the age of Social Security, the fiscal type issues that we're told are so popular. I'd like them both. I'm a conservative across the board. So I sort of feel the pain of Tea Partiers in being harangued, or the conservative side of the ledger, in being harangued all this time and accused of being the ones responsible for losses. But at the same time, I do think Republicans should stop the circular firing squad, and most importantly, stop primarying our own guys. As long as we're still a minority in the Senate, let's get a big veto-proof majority in the Senate, and then purge the impure Republicans.
You won a campaign against an incumbent Republican, Mitch McConnell, obviously a big name. Is he somebody you would like to see a challenge against now, or maybe when you have a safer majority?
Never. And I'm so glad you mentioned this. I've been arguing with talk radio host after talk radio host. I was just on for about an hour with Jay Severin. And I said, look, I will give you facts. And that is something I insist upon in chapter 2 of my book, Advice to Republicans. We're not liberals. We don't engage in groupthink and mobthink and use shibboleths like, you know, Halliburton. But I just keep hearing Mitch McConnell is a rhino. I'll give you facts why he's a conservative and why I support him. One quick one was, or is, He was the Ted Cruz against campaign finance reform. I think he's the best Republican leader in the Senate we've had in my lifetime. It's not an easy job. You have to represent the entire spectrum of Republicans. Now, please give me facts why I should oppose him. He's also voted the same as Rand Paul, you know, the majorly upgraded Tea Party candidate from Kentucky. So why is Rand Paul, oh, we love him, but we hate Mitch McConnell? It just seems to be the same sort of groupthink that liberals normally engage in, not our party. For an hour, nobody could give me a fact on Mitch McConnell. I've put it out there on Twitter. I've said it on talk radio. I'm perfectly willing to say, yes, someday we might want to primary him. Not right now. I'd say that about Lamar Alexander. I would definitely say that about Lindsey Graham. But what is it they don't like about Mitch McConnell?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've talked to people on the left in the Democratic Party who say, why can't we stop sniping at each other? Why can't we be unified like the Republicans? Is that just something that each side perceives in itself, that we're fragmented, the other side is this monolith?
I think it is delusional for the Democrats to think they're fragmented. I keep asking the few liberal and Democratic friends I have, how did you guys get your party to stop that? Your base is much crazier than ours is. And they say it was probably, well, some say it was through losing all the time that they finally got together. I mean, why isn't Emily's List or NARAL for America down protesting Mark Pryor in Arkansas, pro-life, pro-Iraq War Democrat, or Bob Casey, pro-life senator from Pennsylvania? Somehow they get their base to understand, no, it's better to have a guy with a D after his name, even if he's not, you know, down the line liberal on everything. Conservatives, I think, haven't learned that, and I hope we don't have to go through another election cycle where we are giving up easy pickup seats for us, like Claire McCaskill in Missouri ran against Todd Akin, admittedly. McCaskill, this is how the Democrats are much cleverer. She contributed to Todd Akin being the one to win that primary, recognizing that he'd be the easiest for her to beat. And her campaign, the New York Times has written this up, her campaign manager said, okay, let's put out a bunch of ads right before the primary describing Todd Akin as the most conservative. And that helped push him over the edge. He was clearly a disaster. If we were the Democratic Party, there would have been an unfortunate hunting accident to get rid of that guy. It's crazy that we gave up a seat in conservative Missouri. It's crazy that Republicans right now aren't thinking about flipping seats that are Democrat now in conservative red states rather than trying to purify our own.
Well, a big part of your book, as you mentioned, is giving advice to Republicans on winning elections. Let's talk about Karl Rove and the 2012 election. Do you think he messed up? Do you think he hurt the party?
I think political consultants are a big problem, and I describe it generally as people who hurt the Republican Party to help themselves, generally with consultants, what they're interested in. I don't write specifically about Rove because I just think it gets too wonky, and a lot of people have written about it. But the cases I think that are the strongest, that ought to be the clearest to right-wingers, are the two Senate seats, and at least one, maybe two Senate seats, lost in Connecticut and West Virginia, by consultants who just wanted the deep-pocketed candidate so they could go buy Jaguars rather than running a candidate who could possibly win. And Linda McMahon, I mean, God bless her for spending so much of her own money in two Senate races in Connecticut. But I was screaming from the rooftops. I was writing columns. She's never going to win in Connecticut. Please, please, Republicans, do not pick her. But she has consultants who are pushing her through the primary. They have to have known she could not have won in Connecticut. I know. John Racy, same thing, very, very wealthy man. He has houses in West Virginia, Telluride and Palm Beach. People in West Virginia thought he's not one of us, and the campaign consultants thought, I'm going to shop for a vacation home if we run this guy. Those are at least two Senate seats, I would say, in Virginia. That's a very conservative state. We shouldn't be losing that Senate races in that state, and at least one in Connecticut. Another three Senate seats right there. The problem with the consultants are they want to maximize their earnings not only by running the wrong candidates, but also by running the wrong sort of campaign. This gets more to the Rove issue, and that is by spending lots and lots of money on television ads when what you need is activism and people and phone banks. But the consultants don't make money off volunteers. They make money off TV ads.
I want to talk about the presidential standard bearers and who you might look for in 2016. Mitt Romney, John McCain, good choices?
McCain was an utter disaster. You may or may not recall, I was not only dead set opposed to him, I supported Hillary over John McCain.
I kind of knew the answer, yeah.
I think I was right. Whereas Romney, I mean, this is like a Mitch McConnell problem. People just calling him a rhino without looking at the facts. He was one of the most conservative and I think most respectable, impressive presidential candidates the Republicans have run. Just because someone wears a nice suit and speaks well does not make him a rhino.
We're talking to Ann Coulter, conservative columnist, author of the new book, Never Trust a Liberal Over Three, Especially a Republican.
Now we'll check the headlines and then we'll be back with more from Ann Coulter. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're back with conservative author and columnist Ann Coulter. Her latest book is called Never Trust a Liberal Over Three, Especially a Republican.
Well, Ann, turning away from electoral politics, you recently did an Ask Me Anything on the new media site Reddit. What was the response like to an open source Ask Ann Coulter Anything?
Lots of questions. I tried to get through all the ones I could, except the ones that were like six paragraphs long.
A lot of preamble.
That's too much to read for a quick answer. Yeah, and it was fun. I liked it.
One of the questions was, and you mentioned this earlier, why you oppose gay marriage? You responded, you mostly oppose gay divorce. What did you mean by that?
That was just a joke.
Oh, okay. And actually, I wanted to ask you about the joke thing. You tell a lot of jokes on the talk shows, during speeches. But, you know, you came from a law school background, worked as a lawyer, Center for Individual Rights. When did you start incorporating humor into your political writing, your political talking?
No one's ever asked me that. Actually, always. It would get edited out of court opinions when I was clerking. And when I first started writing, I was writing for Human Events. I don't even think you could find these columns. This was back in, let's see, I think I started January 1997. I'd left the Senate Judiciary Committee then. I was working for MSNBC and writing for Human Events. And their editing technique, which I pointed out to them and complained about, was to go through and systematically remove every joke. And I told them, you know, if you just do that, for one thing, often the sentence before has no real point other than as a setup for the joke. And also, I mean, that's what leavens some of the hyperbole, to throw in a joke here and there. You take the jokes out, it sounds like I'm just, you know, it's just crusading anger. But really all that happened is editors became more compliant with letting me keep the jokes in.
And the jokes, though, sometimes get an angry action. Sometimes you mentioned, you know, if this was a Democrat, the candidate would have had a hunting accident. Do you think people take things out of context, or maybe are they right to challenge you on some of the more out there joke lines?
I maintain that through a horrible medical accident in the 60s and 70s, some children were born with a procedure and had a procedure that removed a sense of irony from them. And they still walk among us, and it's just sad. There's nothing you can do. You say to them, hot enough for you? What do you mean hot? I hate it this hot. No, I was being ironic.
And now, more about reaction to you. People have compared you to a Nazi. People have asked you to sign copies of Mein Kampf as a protest at book signings. You're known for riling people up. Do you think it ever gets to be too much? Does it offend you? How offended people get with you?
No. I think I'd be embarrassed if that were my response to someone. I mean, some of the, you mentioned Reddit. I mean, some of the responses there, and also I kind of skim through them. I don't read a lot of the interaction page on my Twitter feed, which is very popular. I generally know when I send one out, which is going to cause a furor, but I don't often go and check to see if I was right. If your best argument is to call me a poopy head, I don't think I'd be doing like a victory dance over that. If you're just using, you know, calling me an effing C word, wow, you sure got me. No, you're the one who looks like an idiot.
Well, the argument is, well, I guess one argument might be you started it, you know, with some of the book titles you've had, you know, Traitors and things like that. Is it a two-way
treason.
Name calling street? A treason, I'm sorry, yes.
Treason.
Fair enough, treason, yes.
Well, I don't think so, because usually the ones posting calling me an effing C-word are probably not the author of 10, by the way. This one makes it 10.
10 best-selling books. I stand corrected. Sit corrected.
Well, you couldn't know. It just happened yesterday.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, here's a response I didn't expect and I didn't know going into this. You have a popularity of following in the gay community. You were named the conservative gay group Go Proud's gay icon. You've been called the right-wing Judy Garland. I think we've heard that you've called yourself that. What's the deal with that?
I have no idea. I just started noticing that my book signings were often turning into, you know, log cabin Republican parties. I suspect it's because we like the same cocktails, the same music, often the same underwear. Gays tend to be ironic. They certainly never pout and say that's not funny. That's more of a feminist thing.
But you've mentioned you're not wild about gay marriage. Does it seem weird that you'd get that following?
No, in fact, I was the first speaker at Go Proud, a conservative gay group, and in addition to, you know, starting with a few jokes on Obama and so on, the bulk of my speech was talking them out of gay marriage. I have never failed to talk gays out of gay marriage. In fact, before they asked me to be their speaker, out in L.A., I have a lot of gay friends, and, you know, most of them admit to you quietly, yeah, I don't really care about gay marriage. So one time I told them, okay, I want you to get all your gay friends together. We're going out. I'm talking any remaining ones out of gay marriage. And I've never failed to, because for one thing, they don't really care about gay marriage. It's more of a feeling of acceptance. And my point is, no, we love gays. We do not want discrimination against gays. And by the way, Republicans have been at the forefront of pushing job discrimination laws, that sort of thing for gays. This has nothing to do with gays per se. It's a defense of a crucial institution that has been under attack from every angle, with the feminists pushing for no-fault divorce, with liberals pushing welfare programs that discourage marriage. You know, it's interesting, the group of people, the community most opposed to gay marriage are black people, and I think that's because they have seen the effects of a lack of marriage within the black community. You get a lot of, you know, single mothers, children raised without fathers, and that is the source of all dysfunction, as described in my book, Guilty.
When you say that gay people you've talked to don't really care that much about gay marriage, I mean, do you reckon that's a representative sample? There's a lot of people who have made the argument to the contrary.
It varies, but I do think a lot of it comes from the being told over and over again, this is a civil right. If people like you, they will give you gay marriage. And the important point to express is, no, we love you. This isn't about you. It's about marriage. Marriage is really under attack from all angles. And look, I'm in the same boat. I'm not married. I'm 120 years old. There are lots of advantages to being a married person. I am fine with that, because the institution of marriage as a cradle to pass civilization on from one generation to the next, that is so crucially important.
Right. We've got a comment from John on Facebook. I don't know if you've seen an article. He says, what's your response to a recent article on Salon hypothesizing that she and you are carrying out an Andy Kaufman-esque satire of politics in your career?
Oh, I didn't see that. That is a claim that has dogged me from the beginning. I don't know why liberals find it comforting to say, I mean, I'm gathering what this means is, oh, you don't really believe it.
I think that's the gist, yeah.
They say that to me as well as other conservatives they find threatening or can't answer. I don't really know why that should be so comforting. If I'm saying something I don't believe, it's weird how persuasive and how many fans I have. That would suggest that the liberal argument is even worse than I thought, that even someone faking it as a conservative can be so persuasive.
All right. And just a couple minutes left, I'd like to play lightning round with a few things in the news these days, if that's okay with you.
Sure, I'm kind of slow, though.
All right, NSA spying on our allies, France and Germany, among others, in the European Union. Your thoughts?
I always sort of assumed it was happening, but wow, the extent of it now, it really is quite alarming.
All right,
I'm more worried about them spying on me, so I'd tell them anything I have to say anyway.
All right. Our governor, Scott Walker, talked about as a possible presidential candidate. What do you think?
Oh, I like him. I thought he was short, and I found out that he's not, so he should definitely be in the running.
Because he's not short.
Right. I mean, I know it's unfair, but it's not my rule. It's just true. We're not going to elect a president that is extremely short, that who has facial hair, no facial hair either. We're not in the 1700s.
No hipsters. Okay.
Well, they can be hip, but they can't have facial hair. What else? Probably no one extremely corpulent. But somebody told me he actually, I don't know why I thought he was short. Someone told me he's not short. He is a governor of a big, important state. So definitely he should be in our primaries if he wants to run.
Paul Ryan, vice presidential candidate, a congressman from Wisconsin, another possible contender.
No congressmen, only senators and governors. No one who lost a debate to Joe Biden. And finally, absolutely no one who supports amnesty.
All right. Maybe you'll have the same response. We'll leave our state Chris Christie as a possible candidate.
That's when I dumped him. And since I was the last right winger defending him, I am dubious about his prospects. I mean, I'd forgive him for a lot, being in a liberal state like New Jersey, and he's so charismatic, and he is very bright, and he's about to win a massive reelection in a blue state. He's a governor. I'm sure he's going to run. But I can't understand why Republicans can't just say, just because Democrats need another 30 million voters isn't a good enough reason for us to give amnesty to lawbreakers.
All right, Anne, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Great to talk to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Anne Coulter, her newest book, Never Trust a Liberal Over Three, Especially a Republican.